School is out. Summer is here. But there is so much work to do. There are preparations for what will hopefully be the first normal return to school since the pandemic started. There's the work of helping kids overcome learning loss, trauma, mental health strains from the last 15 months. And if you're Brenda Caselius, the head of the Boston Public Schools, there are also a number of institutional challenges that have to be addressed. Superintendent Caselius has checked in with us throughout the pandemic. We're happy to close the school year with her today. Superintendent Caselius, welcome back. Thanks for joining us again.
And thank you, TC. I'm glad to be here.
So school year has come to an end. I'm going to ask you, did you crawl over the finish line or are you still on your 2 feet?
Well, actually, I think we celebrated over the finish line because we were able to work with the Red Sox and have our graduations at Fenway, which was such a celebratory end to what was a really challenging and difficult school year. And to see our graduates come across the stage after all that they've persevered, with diplomas in hand and their teachers cheering them on, it was quite an amazing moment.
So there's a lot we're going to talk about, but I just kind of want to dig into the heart of this year's experience. When you look back at it, what are you at peace with and what aren't you at peace with over how things unfolded over this last school year?
What I am at peace with is that our team really rallied and the community really rallied, the city, everybody. It was an all hands on deck. And we couldn't have done it with all the incredible support of our families who bridged the gap and helped lift us up and help keep their kids engaged, to our teachers who got creative and just, you know, launched into a one-to-one platform and reinvented their practice. To our school leaders who just, you know, had to continue to shift and change with the shifting and changing guidance that we had in our operational team and, you know, just really, really getting it done for kids and really the toughest of circumstances of a global pandemic. And so that's what I'm at peace with. I think the thing that I'm not at peace with is that we really did, you know, have a hard time engaging our older students, especially. Our younger students had a difficult time, our 3, 4, 5-year-olds accessing the technology, you know, and then some of our parents just really not knowing how to help their students, especially parents who had language barriers. So those are things that we've learned and we'll take into account as we start the new year, and we'll get stronger because of it.
So knowing that now, and none of us can go back. I mean, over my career, I know there are many times where I've thought, God, if I knew then, right, what I know now. If you did know then what you know now, is there anything you would have done differently last September in setting up that 2020 to 2021 school year?
Well, it was really hard to know back then because we just didn't know what we were dealing with still within, you know, August, September. You know, one of the things I think that we began to get more evidence and science behind was the air quality. And I wish, you know, our buildings just weren't so old and that our windows were fixed and that we had better systems and better science behind air quality. I think that was one of the things that was tripping us up the most, was how are we going to ensure the health and safety of our teachers, of our students, of our whole school community with the air quality. So lots to learn there. Good thing the Harvard professors stepped in and gave us good guidance on that.
So let's talk about this summer now. You know, one of the things that I know has come up is this balance between the need to aid young people, kids who may have lost learning over the last year. You just talked about the kids that you're not at peace with because they struggled, the younger kids, the high school kids who didn't check in as often, where there wasn't family support or there wasn't internet access. And there's work to be done there. And we've also heard, we did a segment recently here on Radio Boston where there was a child psychiatrist talking about the need for kids to just be kids this summer. You know, what that balance and how do we make the call between summer school, summer programs, and break out of the building and play?
Yes. Well, play is extremely important to learning. And I'm real big on play-based learning, project-based learning, you know, expeditionary learning. And Boston really has great programming, a nationally recognized programming with Boston After School and Beyond. We have been partnering with them for many years now. I was just pleased when I came into Boston 2 years ago and found this program already enriching the lives of our children during the summer gap months. But this year in particular, being very intentional around the trauma, we have additional nurses and social workers who will be working with our students so that we reconnect with them and rebuild and help our students kind of re-enter into the space of learning. At the same time, also being cognizant of outdoor play, outdoor spaces, outdoor gardening, there's sailing classes, arts programming, and then connecting with the city on city jobs for our older kids to get them back out and engaged. So a lot of options for families as we reconnect and reengage this summer.
So, you know, we've been talking about this unprecedented year. There are a number of institutional challenges for the Boston Public Schools right now, too. And I want to dive into some of those with you. And I want to start with this idea of a virtual school. A week ago, you announced that Boston Public Schools will reverse course and not open a virtual school this fall. You said it was too short of a timeline. What would have made a difference here? For example, if the State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education had given you feedback sooner, and your final application could have been in what, beginning of June, would that have helped? What would have allowed you to do the virtual school this year?
Yeah, so I think, you know, that's part of it is, you know, just getting the application and getting the green light sooner would have helped. And I think also just the fact of having to go back to school this fall and reconnect and get families engaged again was another piece of it. Registration, we've had late registrations. And so how would we get families? And there wasn't a lot of interest. We had less than 1,000 families express interest into a BPS virtual school, which then made us think, well, maybe there are other options that we could work with families. And we know that our families sometimes will make decisions a little later to around school choice. And so we thought even that 1,000 number might not hold up once they start reemerging after being shut in or maybe unvaccinated, and now they'll get vaccinated. So we didn't think that it was really going to be viable to establish the entire BPS virtual school. So we'll be working over the summer to see if we can do a smaller program for instructional opportunities for students who need to be at least part-time remote.
But it is my understanding that you plan to open a virtual school for the fall of 2022. Is that correct?
We're going to explore that as a possibility to open for fall of 2022 if we think that there's greater interest.
So I wonder, I understand it's fewer than 1,000 people. I also understand there's so much that kids couldn't have and schools couldn't do. And I got to ask you, is it hard? You were going to do this or thought you were. Is it hard to say no to something you could have done that you were going to do at a time when there's so much in the last 15 or 16 months schools couldn't do for kids and families, even small groups, if they wanted it?
Yeah, we always wish that we could offer a full menu of programming and services to our families, and we'll continue to strive to do that. And we just, you know, in this short of time of period, we just were not able to do that. And if it's possible to get one up and going, even in a smaller sense, in the next several years, we're going to continue to explore it, especially since our kids are now one-to-one. And there are great ways to do blended learning and to have classrooms without walls, you know, and find ways, especially at the upper school level, to be able to have kids take courses online and through remote options, you know, that aren't necessarily in a brick and mortar classroom.
Okay, I want to turn to the Boston School Committee. Most recently, two resignations, but over the last, well, a little less than a year, four resignations total, including two chairs of the school committee. Your assessment of the state of the Boston School Committee right now and how to repair the damage after the loss of so many committee members, mostly around racial tensions, although we'll get to the student representative in that issue as well.
You know, so obviously it's painful and challenging for the community to have turnover on your school committee. But I, you know, we have five seasoned school committee members now who are working together, they elected a chair within Ms. Jerry Robinson, who is a known leader within the community around early childhood. And, you know, she's been on the committee for several years. And then Michael O'Neill, who is the vice chair, will be still continuing to be the vice chair and supporting her. We meet weekly, you know, once or twice a week, and we talk about the issues of the school district. And so I feel it's in a strong position, and the mayor's made a commitment to have those seats filled within the next several weeks here.
Okay, so the Boston Public Schools are due about $430 million in elementary and secondary school emergency relief, or ESSER. That's funding coming from the federal government. The school committee ultimately votes on how to spend it. And then State Education Commissioner Jeff Riley has threatened to freeze, or said he's considering freezing this funding as a result of the turmoil in the school committee. Here he is speaking during a Tuesday Department of Elementary and Secondary Education virtual meeting.
I am extremely concerned about what's transpired on that school committee. They've lost four members this year, two of whom are board chairs. And the fact that there's nearly a half a billion dollars, I think it's $430 million that are coming in ESSER funding, makes me nervous about what's happening in Boston. And so we're going to wait and see and look at the stability and what happens with that board.
First, your response to that, and also, have you spoken with the commissioner since he made those remarks?
I have spoken to the commissioner, and I know that he was responding to one of his school committee members, and, you know, trying to put in context, you know, how disruptive it can be. However, you know, I speak to the commissioner quite regularly because of our MOU, and, you know, I think that, you know, we are going to have a strong plan. We've had a very strong stakeholder engagement process with our commission. We've had a number of community meetings. We've met with our parent groups. We've met with our school leaders. We've met with the BTU and union leaders. And so we have really strong input into this plan, which, you know, is what a school committee does. And so when I bring the recommendations to the school committee, they will be very well vetted and I think broad consensus around the areas in which to invest that funding. And we've also... we're working to put in an oversight office within the Boston Public Schools so that we're good stewards of the funding and make sure that we hold ourselves accountable for the implementation and monitoring of that funding. And so I think that that will give him confidence in being able to release those dollars. Obviously, you know, this funding is put in place for recovery, and we need to get that in the hands of our teachers and our school leaders as soon as possible so that they can do the good work on behalf of our kids.
Okay, so there's more we could talk about there, but I'm aware of time and there's some other issues I want to jump into. With the school committee in mind, it's considering doing away with the entrance exams for elite schools like Boston Latin School, Boston Latin Academy, the O'Brien School of Math and Science, replacing that with a lottery. You and I talked on air when the exam was temporarily suspended due to COVID. You know, the goal would be to help level the playing field by giving students who are economically or academically disadvantaged an equal shot. This would be a seismic shift for the school district, for families. What's the path to a quality decision there? And what information and factors do you think need to be considered?
Well, first, I want to thank, you know, the co-chairs, Tanisha Sullivan, president of the NAACP, and Mike Contopassis, longtime educator, head of school at the Boston Latin School, as well as superintendent of Boston Public Schools, and their incredible work of working with this entire working group to look at all of the different options, looking at grading, looking at the use of an assessment, looking at geographic equity, lotteries, census tracts, zip codes, and how that data all shakes out. And so just very appreciative of the many, many hours they've put in and the community engagement that they've done. We met with city council members. We met with electeds at the State House. We've met with parents and broad-based community members around those options. They're meeting again this evening. I anticipate that they're getting closer to consensus to bring recommendations. And we hope to be having those next Wednesday at the school committee meeting.
And is a lottery the best way to achieve equity?
Well, they have, they're debating the lottery, they're debating zip code, and they're debating the kind of the qualifying pool to get in terms of merit. And so those are what the group is still debating in terms of how to get best at equity. As you know, this year we were able to pilot a program and we did get at greater equity. We had more students who were homeless who, you know, maybe wouldn't have had a shot before, students who speak languages other than English. We had racial diversity. We had more diversity with students with disabilities who were able to access our exam schools. And so it's, you know, I'm really excited about the opportunity to bring greater equity and geographic equity across the city to our exam schools.
All right. I want to talk about Youth on Board. I want to talk about the controversy over their use of reevaluation counseling with the District Student Advisory Council. This is a complex story. We're not going to break it all down here. A recent investigation found concerns with the reevaluation counseling. A number of students resigned and concerned about it. BPS announced last month that you are expanding this investigation. Any updates on that investigation and when do you expect it to conclude?
Yeah, this is really just an unfortunate, you know, two-decade program that was going on with our students around peer counseling and reevaluation counseling that we had no idea about, and I had no idea about, but we need to get to the bottom of that. And that is why I expanded the investigation to look at former students and look broader within the organization and what went wrong here and get to the bottom of it. And, you know, we have now hired an outside investigator who will do that work. And we're just finalizing our contract with that person and we will get started on that right away.
I have to ask you this tough question. You know, some students have called for you to resign as a result of this. You just said you didn't know about it. Should you have known about it?
Well, for the past 18 months, I've been doing a pandemic, but I have been meeting with the students. And so, you know, I wish that I had known from them. You know, I met with them almost weekly during the pandemic, really early shut-in days, and then went to once a month meeting with them. And, you know, students are my heart. And that's the reason I come to this work and come to this job. And so when I learned of it, we swiftly dealt with it. We ended our relationship immediately. We expanded the investigation. And, you know, we are now doing the really hard work of repair with our students. We created new bylaws with them and we are moving forward and trying to deal with the healing that's, you know, unfortunately, the trust that was broken with our students. And, you know, that's the best that you can do moving forward is, you know, make sure that we own what is our responsibility and that we are able to move forward and make it right.
All right. So much for us to talk about. I do hope you'll come back again soon. Before we let you go, what are you going to do to blow off some steam this summer?
Water ski. And read a couple of good books.
Nice. Boston Public Schools Superintendent Brenda Casilius, thanks for closing the school year with us.
Thank you, Tiziana. I appreciate you.
So Boston Public Schools conversation there. We're going to turn now to WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin, who was listening. Max, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Max, we have just a little bit of time, and what I really want to know are your reactions to what we just heard from the superintendent.
Tiziana, in these long interviews with Casilius, I'm always reminded that her roots are in Minnesota. She has to be one of the most upbeat public officials in this state, even after like the most grinding 16 months you can imagine. But I do think you heard that she recognizes that there is, as you said, a lot of work to do for the district on a ton of different fronts. So it just has to be daunting.
And you've been following, we talked about a lot of different things. The one I really want to ask you about is you've been following this threat from Commissioner Riley on the ESS ER funds to Boston Public Schools. Are those reasonable consequences for a failure in leadership? Is that a power move? What would be the consequences if he withholds that funding?
Well, Tiziana, I spoke to a teacher who serves on the nominating committee for new members of the school committee, and he made a good point. He said he had three members resign after making comments that in some way damaged public trust. Is that a failure? You know, if they resigned and then taking a month to find their replacements, is that a failure? I think that's a reasonable argument. It kind of got lost in the shuffle last spring that the state was kind of edging its way into BPS in an oversight role due to perceived academic underperformance. And I do think we're kind of getting some reminders lately that Commissioner Jeff Riley hasn't forgotten about Boston. Just as a final thought on the consequences, it may not seem like a big deal if you have to go, say, 3 or 4 weeks without these funds being released. But, you know, people in the education budget business say July is actually, June and July are important months. That's when you have the best hires to make out of the labor market. New programs take a little while to plan, like that virtual academy. And then you've got works projects that are urgent and time consuming, and you want to get those underway.
Max, we are actually at the end of the show. I'm glad we got to touch bases with you a little bit, and I hope you'll come back soon because I think there's more we should talk about here.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yep, that's WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin.